I might start out this evening just talking a little bit about breath meditation, and then we can do some meditation together for 20 minutes or so, and then have some Dhamma talk. The breath is this has this liminal quality. It exists in this twilight zone of neither being quite in our body or quite out of it. It's neither quite us nor not us. It's neither a physical kind of entity, nor is it an entirely immaterial or mental thing. It's neither like a consciously directed or deliberated activity of the body, nor is it entirely unconscious and outside of our control. We normally don't control it, but if we want to control it, then we can. So it's in between those two categories. And so it's no accident that most peoples at one time or another will tend to identify the breath as their self or their soul. We use the word spirit in English from the same root as respiration. Or aspiration. So to breathe is the spirit of the soul. And of course we can see that when somebody dies that their breath leaves them. And so it's very natural to identify the breath as the life principle. And sometimes is parodied, like in the Melinda Panha, where somebody claimed that the breath was the soul, and then the question was, well, if what about trumpet players then? They breathe out all of their breath, and does their soul leave them? Which might not be such a unlikely occurrence as you might think, because I'm not sure of what the case was in ancient India, but I do know that in medieval times, the time of Bach and earlier, before they invented the valved trumpet, there actually was an extraordinarily short lifespan among trumpet players because of the effort that was required to play all the high notes and the harmonics on that, and so continually breathing out so hard, and they had a very short lifespan. So perhaps there is something to that after all. So when we want to focus on the breath, we're focusing on something which is in this twilight zone. And that's what makes the breath such a interesting and such an elusive meditation object. So it's very enigmatic. That's why we can sustain interest on it, because it's not obvious. It's far from obvious. Now, people have very different kinds of ways of relating to the breath. Some people can't find it at all. They sit down to meditate and they just can't see the breath. It just doesn't seem to be there. Other people can find it easy enough, but they keep on trying to control it and find it very, very difficult to avoid sort of scrunching up the nose and the eyes around the breath to try to kind of grab hold of it, and sort of the will is getting in the way, getting involved there. Some people, when they're doing meditation on the breath, like to play tricks with it. So they like to sort of move the breath around the body and so on and so forth. Other people like to focus just in one place. Some people say just focus on the belly. Some people say just focus on the nose tip. Other people say don't focus anywhere at all. Some people say focus on the whole body. Ajahn Brahm says don't worry about where the physical location of it is. So there are all these different approaches to the breath, and I assume that if all those teachers are speaking out of their own experience, probably all of those approaches have a certain validity or usefulness for some people. I don't think there's any reason to assume that there's one and only kind of right way of watching the breath. And certainly it seems to be the case that different people will pick up different methods and have an affinity for them, and that will bring good results for them. So whatever method that we're using, then it needs to reflect these two, this ambiguous or liminal quality of the breath. That is to say, on the one hand, it needs to be, the meditation needs to be very clear, very defined, very concrete. We need to pin our mind onto the breath, be clearly aware of the start and the middle and the end of the breath, be clearly aware of the texture and movement of the breath, bringing our mind back from straying and wandering, cutting off wandering thoughts, and applying ourselves to that meditation with determination and commitment. So this is like one side of the breath meditation. The other side of the breath meditation is more like our emotional engagement or relationship with the breath. Seeing the breath as something very beautiful, seeing the breath as something very soft, very relaxing, and Ajahn Ganha, Ajahn Chah's nephew, one of the great meditation masters in the Thai forest tradition, his breath meditation consists of the word sabai. That's basically the only word he uses. Breathing in, sabai. Breathing out, sabai. So sabai means just relax, take it easy, comfortable. Breathing in, sabai. Breathing out, sabai. Now, of course, Ajahn Brahm very famously emphasizes the beautiful breath. And so that tends to the aspect of beauty emphasizes the visual aspect of how the breath appears to the mind. That is to say, in terms of a nimitta or light or something which appears to the mind with a sense of beauty, which attracts the mind to it. And also emphasizing the pleasure, the actual feelings of rapture and bliss that come with the breath, when the breath is, when we commune with the breath in a when we commune with the breath in the right way, which means in a way which is gentle and forgiving and careful. And I'm thinking about breath meditation. This image that comes to mind is this cartoon and of this woman in a shopping center. And she's, I don't remember I saw this, but it's one of these kind of 1950s style cartoons that they kind of draw, and she's just in the shopping center or something like that, and there's this look of horror in her face. And the caption is, "Oh my God, I left a baby on the bus." And this is the attitude we should have towards meditation, breath meditation especially, is we would no more leave our breath behind than when we would leave our baby on the bus. And so that encompasses those two aspects. So looking after the baby is one aspect of being very very careful, watching out for it, and being very alert is one aspect of that, but also the other aspect is the softness and the gentleness, so that when you're holding the baby or keeping it, you'd never let it go, let it out of your sight. You'd always keep it there, but that keeping would never be out of a sense of forcing, but be out of a sense of love and gentleness. And so that's a very beautiful way of thinking about how we should relate to the breath. And if we go off and emphasize either of these two things too much, then we'll fall into the very common faults that often we have in breath meditation. If we're trying to be too tight, too controlling, too forcing, then the breath will never get subtle. The forehead will kind of squeeze up and pucker up, and we'll end up with a case of samadhi headache. And on the other hand, if we're too relaxed in our approach to the breath meditation, just take it easy, too much, without a sense of discipline and commitment to it, then we'll just tend to drift around and go into a kind of hazy no man's land, and quite often end up just falling asleep and drifting through the meditation. So these are two extremes or two flaws, which is quite common, and which we need to just quietly, persistently work with to try to overcome these things. So when watching the breath, if we follow the to get that initial establishment on the breath, we follow the very important first four steps of Anapanasati, the first tetrad. First stage of establishing the mind on the long breath coming in and out, and then the short breath coming in and out. Now that doesn't mean that you sit there and breathe long breaths in and long breaths out, and then short breaths in and short breaths out. What it means is that when you first come to sit meditation, because the energy in the body is still coarse and still activated and so on, then you tend to need more oxygen, and so the breath tends to be longer. And then as you sit there, the mind becomes relaxed, the body becomes relaxed, the mindfulness becomes calm, sense of tranquility becomes deeper, then your body, and especially your brain, doesn't need so much oxygen, and so the breath tends to become much finer and more subtle. And so notice again that this happens over that field of like the twilight kind of field, or the liminal dimension, where you're not controlling it, but you're observing it. There's a pattern which you're observing, and it's neither completely automatic and natural, nor is it determined and willed. And then the next stage, third stage, sabbakaya patisangvedi, and then the sabba, all, experiencing the whole breath, body, here emphasizes the completeness and the totality of that meditation. So that whereas in the previous stage you'd be watching the breath and there's like interruptions in the flow of awareness, so that the mind will be jumping in and out or skipping to and fro its field of awareness, that here it starts to kind of flow much more continuously, so that one's aware of the entire flow of the breath coming in and out. And some people also interpret this stage as literally being aware of the whole body, and so sort of adjusting the breath so that the you can feel the whole body breathing in and out. And that's actually also quite a good technique at that stage as well. And then the fourth step of the first tetrad is tranquilizing the breath. And so this is like completing and deepening that process of tranquility, which has actually been starting from the very beginning of meditation. And by this stage of the tranquilizing of the breath can become very subtle indeed, and so much so that it can disappear altogether. You can't see the breath. It will seem like it's vanished. Even if it doesn't seem like it's vanished, it becomes almost very residual. And the more subtle the breath becomes like this, then the more subtle your mindfulness and awareness has to be to focus on it. And so there's this continual backing and forthing. As the breath becomes more subtle, then the mind also becoming more subtle. Okay, so let's spend the next 20 minutes or so doing some guided breath meditation. Sitting quietly, bringing a sense of ease and balance to the body. Noticing the feelings in the different parts of the body. As the body starts to quieten down, mind starts to quieten down. And bring awareness to that subtle rhythm of the breath. Wherever you feel that breath, usually clearest in the nose, the tip of the nose. Clearly focused mindfulness there. Being aware of the breath coming in, breath going out, breath coming in, breath going out. Each time the breath comes in, we re-establish mindfulness. Each time it goes out, we re-establish mindfulness. Continually applying the mind onto the breath, carefully, gently, persistently. As the breath starts to calm down, mindfulness becomes more clear, then we try to keep that continuity of awareness, holding the mind with the breath, smoothly flowing in and out. feeling the breath become very subtle, very soft. Finally coming near the end of the meditation. Just bringing the mind back into the whole body. Feeling the breath within that whole body. Reawakening the senses. I'm just taking a minute to review over how that meditation went. What was just going on? Did I understand the process of that meditation? Did I understand the instructions? Was I confused? Was I able to follow those instructions in the practice? Was my mind pliable and agreeable, or was it rebellious and harsh? How does my mind now compare with how it was at the start of the meditation? Finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings rejoice in the merit that we've made through our practice. May all beings finally realize Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu. Thank you.